This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
From pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. This is not the voice of your cultural crusader. It's of one of his producers, rockstar Greg Tomlin. Thank you so much for joining us this Christmas Eve. We're playing some history shows for you today, all available at MedvedHistoryStore.com. Without further ado, this hour, we're going to be listening to the Battle of Princeton, another famous Revolutionary War battle. Please enjoy. Here's Michael.
Just imagine the situation. It's January 2nd. January 2nd, 1777. George Washington's forces have just been reinforced by a bunch of green militia. When the green militia would walk into camp, the veterans in their rags and blankets would try to shout out a huzzah, but then would think, it's good to have these extra men. What utility can they possibly be? They've never faced battle before. Meanwhile, battle-hardened veterans, the cream of the British Army, is bearing down upon you. Yes, they were delayed, heroically delayed, by Colonel Hand with his hit-and-run tactics, and delayed also by the weather. But now, the British, Lord Cornwallis, as his men are still coming up, peering through that winter dusk at the American lines, decides we've got the old fox safe now. We'll bag him in the morning. Against the advice of his quartermaster general, who thought that Washington would somehow give Cornwallis the slip, but the British were determined to keep an eye on the Americans and to come after them if there was any attempt to slip away. And in that case, with the Americans retreating, the British guns could simply blast them to bits and end the war right there. Meanwhile, as dark fell on the streets of Trenton and on the American lines across Assunpink Creek, Washington had his own council of war. Remember, we talked earlier about what was in Washington's mind. Why did he recross the Delaware? Nobody knows. The only assumption is that he recrossed the Delaware, really, to try to inspire his men to get some people to reenlist. That seemed to work. But now what do? You've got some militia. You've got an army. There were some in his staff who felt that the army was in such a strong position with their fortifications on Assunpink Creek, they should stand and fight, let Cornwallis come on the next morning, give him battle. Washington was reluctant to do that because this was one battle. Well, if he lost, there was no escape. The icy Delaware was to his back, no boats to retreat. And then there were other officers who said, "General, it's dark now. Let us retreat. Let us try somehow to slip to the south, find boats, go back across the river, go back to Pennsylvania. We have made a demonstration into New Jersey. Let us flee from the British." And then one of Washington's best friends had a different idea. That best friend was a remarkable man. His name was Hugh Mercer, Dr. Hugh Mercer. He was Washington's personal physician. He had treated Washington's stepdaughter, Patsy, who was Martha's daughter. He had treated Washington's mother. He lived in Fredericksburg, Maryland. Fascinating man. He was 52 years old at the time. He was now a general in the Continental Army. One of the most prominent physicians in the colonies. You may remember that Dr. Joseph Warren, another very prominent physician, had given his life at the Battle of Bunker Hill, one of the leaders of the Massachusetts Patriots. Well, Dr. Hugh Mercer from Fredericksburg, Virginia, was similarly prominent, similarly respected, and similarly heroic. Mercer was a fascinating man. He was the son of a minister from Aberdeen, Scotland. He himself had studied medicine at a prestigious medical college in Aberdeen, and then had come over to America, made his life in Fredericksburg. He always spoke with a Scottish burr. was extraordinarily popular. One of the things that touched people was his devotion to his young son, a teenage son, a son who had been born deaf and mute, but was an aspiring artist, and who often would accompany General Mercer. The son preserved some of the most startling images that we have of these battles and these events, because he later trained as an artist despite his handicap. And of course, you couldn't serve in an army if you were deaf and mute in those days, because you needed to hear guns. You needed to hear people approaching you from behind. But he did record some of these events of the Battle of Princeton that we're leading up to. Dr. Mercer, who also, by the way, had been a business partner with Washington in some land speculation that had worked out well, came to his friend, General Washington, and said, look, it's not a question of doing battle and risking everything or retreating. There's something else we can do. Let us slip around the British and go right past them and do what we did at Trenton. Take a night march, march all night, and then launch a surprise attack at the village of Princeton. Even then a college town, by the way. The College of New Jersey, which later became known as Princeton University, had established itself in this little college town. 25 years before, it had already graduated one rather prominent graduate. His name was James Madison. The largest building in all of the colonies, bigger than Independence Hall, was a building called Nassau Hall at Princeton College, what was known as the College of New Jersey. It had been designed, by the way, by the same architect who designed Independence Hall. But Nassau Hall was much bigger. Anyway, the idea was that General Mercer had gotten some excellent intelligence. One of the things that helped the Americans is they had a whole network of spies. He had gotten a map. We don't know who drew the map, but whoever drew it changed history, because the map showed exactly where the British troops were distributed. There were 1,500 troops in Princeton. Now, Washington knew he could not possibly win a victory against the 5,000 to 8,000 troops who Cornwallis had in front of him. But with his 4,000 and more men, including the raw militia, Washington felt fairly certain, with the urgings of General Mercer, that he could strike at this British garrison in Princeton, take stores, take prisoners, win a victory, and then move on to an even more crucial location, Brunswick. What was called Brunswick, Jersey. Today it's known as New Brunswick, New Jersey. It's a place where Rutgers University is today. But in any event, Brunswick, Washington knew, had something crucial that he needed, perhaps more than his army needed anything else. It had gold and silver. How much? Remember what Washington wanted for his army to keep his army going? He wanted 150 pounds sterling. 150 pounds sterling. 70,000. Pound sterling in Brunswick. The entire money supply for the whole British Expeditionary Force, 70,000 pounds sterling, enough to recruit tens of thousands of new Continentals. If Washington can bag that prize, everything changes. Guarded by 400 men. But to do this, you have to slip around the British. And at this point, Washington, the old frontier fighter, showed what even his detractors in history, and yeah, Washington has detractors. I don't know why, frankly, but he does. I mean, you know why, because right now in America, any true greatness is often ridiculed. But even those who are skeptical about George Washington recognize his military genius here, because he gave a series of orders. Once he had decided, around midnight, what needed to be done, he ordered a number of the men to take apart some cedar rail fences and to build bonfires everywhere to make it look like there were more men present than he had. So that when Cornwallis and his staff looked out 150 yards and saw the American lines, they saw one fire after another. And Washington also detailed between 300 and 400 men to take shovels and picks and to dig, and to dig, and to dig. But he gave one puzzling instruction to them. He said, please make a lot of noise. Clank your shovels together. So that all night long, the British heard the Americans digging their fortifications. Of course, the Americans weren't going anywhere. If they were planning to leave, why were they fortifying themselves? Why were they building these trenches? The entire thing was ingenious and remarkably effective.
You're listening to a special history program. For more history shows, go to medvedhistorystore.com.
Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. This is $19.95 for a 3-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, MyPillow is launching the MyPillow 2.0. Back when MyPillow was invented, it had everything you could want in a pillow. Now, nearly two decades later, they've discovered a new technology that makes MyPillow even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. Say goodbye to tossing and turning and flipping your pillow over in the middle of the night, and more great news on the MyPillow 2.0, buy one, get one free with promo code MEDVED. MyPillow 2.0 with its temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio podcast square to receive the MyPillow 2.0 buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code MEDVED at MyPillow.com to get your MyPillow 2.0s today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
You're listening to a special history program, The Battle of Princeton.
And Washington also detailed between 300 and 400 men to take shovels and picks and to dig and to dig and to dig, but he gave one puzzling instruction to them. He said, please make a lot of noise. Clank your shovels together. So that all night long, the British heard the Americans digging their fortifications. Of course, the Americans weren't going anywhere. If they were planning to leave, why were they fortifying themselves? Why were they building these trenches? The entire thing was ingenious and remarkably effective. The British were completely bamboozled. And meanwhile, there was another bit of American assistance. While the officers were still discussing the fine points of their planning, an enlisted man ran and brought word that it had suddenly turned cold, and he noted that the ground was beginning to freeze. Remember, Cornwallis had been delayed because of the muddy roads. All of a sudden, the mud froze over. It froze solid. The temperature dipped down to close to 20 degrees. Washington later described this as another providential change of weather. And he also ordered that all of the guns and all of the wagons carrying the baggage for his little army should have cloth wrapped in their wheels to deaden the racket they would make on the freezing ground. He also ordered 2 cannon, along with the 400 men who were digging and making a lot of noise, 2 cannon to sporadically just shoot a few rounds toward the British. Knew it wouldn't hurt them. Just keep them entertained. What Washington said is, let us allow the cannon to amuse the enemy. And meanwhile, he silently, secretly, gave the order to march. His troops had no clue where they were going or what they were doing, but they obeyed. Here is it's not been published in book form, but it's fascinating. It's an eyewitness account by Sergeant Joseph White. He is somebody that, if you remember our talking about the Battle of Trenton, he was the last one to go back across the river because he wanted to get an extra gun. He'd also picked up an extra sword to get an extra cannon to use in the cause. Here is what Sergeant White records about that night, the night of January 2nd, 1777. An eyewitness account, and I'm going to read it in his own words, which are sometimes grammatically incorrect. He, by the way, said he got promoted to sergeant because he was such a good speller. At one point, a lieutenant was asking for someone who could spell because the lieutenant couldn't, and White volunteered. He said, "Sir, I can spell near anything." And apparently his spelling led to his promotion. Here's what Sergeant White wrote down. By the way, his spelling is not as great as he thought. But he writes, "We were dismissed for an hour or two to pull down all the fences we could find, to build fires with them, and get some refreshment. The fires were made to deceive the enemy, to make them suppose that we were encamped. About 10 o'clock, orders came by whispering, not a loud word must be spoken, to form the line and to march. We took such a circuitous route, we were all night marching from Trenton to Princeton. Captain Benjamin Frothingham came to me and said, 'You and I must march together.' We marched some ways, I being exceeding sleepy. I pitched forward several times and recovered myself. Said he, 'You are the first person I ever see sleep while marching. Do you know that you are to command that left piece tomorrow morning?'" Meaning a cannon. "I expect we shall have some hard fighting. We are going to attack Princeton, the enemy's headquarters." I told him I could not. "I want to know where all the commissioned officers were. Whose orders is it?" "It is Colonel Knox's," said he. "I do not think I am capable. The responsibility is too great for me," said I. "I cannot think why he should pitch upon me." "Why, he remembers what you did at Trenton," said he. I began to feel my pride arising, and I said no more. Meanwhile, along the line of march, with the muffled wheels going over the frozen ground, the exhausted men, in the astonishingly bitter cold, Captain John Hazlitt, remember he is that one-man regiment, the only survivor, the only one staying put from that heroic 1st Delaware Regiment, the Blue Hen Regiment, Colonel John Hazlitt, he had those orders in his pocket ordering him to leave, get out of there, go down to Delaware and recruit a new regiment. He ignored the orders. He marched alongside his friend, General Hugh Mercer. Dr. Hugh Mercer. Mercer was on his large gray horse. Hazlitt, through the small hours of the morning, walking alongside him, walking painfully. Hazlitt had fallen into the river, the Delaware River, during that famous crossing on Christmas night. His limbs were still badly swollen, still suffering from frostbite, but he spoke quietly to General Mercer as they walked. Washington, with his staff, was near the end of this column of stragglers. About 3 a.m, marching down these backwoods roads, as quietly as they can, not to arouse the British. All of a sudden, panic. A group of militiamen from Philadelphia had been told that they were surrounded, that the British were about to strike. They threw down their arms, and about 400 of them ran away. They just left. They ran into the woods in the dark. There was no stopping them. The American officers tried to take control. The panic was entirely a false alarm. The British had no idea what was going on. Meanwhile, when Cornwallis awoke the next morning to a morning that was described memorably and eloquently by a member of Washington's staff, the member of his staff is named Romney, Thomas Romney, he said, "That morning was bright, serene, and extremely cold." We now know it was about 23 degrees, "with a hoarfrost which spangled every object. Everything glittering. The roads and fields were bare with no snow, only the hoarfrost glittering under that early morning sun." Cornwallis, outraged that the fox had given him the slip, rouses his men, sends them back after Washington. And meanwhile, the American column itself delayed. Washington had planned to arrive in Princeton to surprise the British garrison there at dawn. But they were late, and around 8 a.m, the commander of the Princeton garrison, whose name was Colonel Charles Mawood, and Colonel Mawood was a dog lover, I mean a serious dog lover, and he knew that he was far from the action, and he had just received orders from Cornwallis. Cornwallis said, "Look, you have about 1,500 men up here, between 12 and 1,500 men, divide them. I want you to march down and to join me in Trenton for this assault that we're expecting on George Washington." And Mawood was delighted that he would be able to see the action. He sent half of his men back to garrison near the College of Princeton. And meanwhile, he set off with about half of his men to march back down to Trenton, where they were going to attack the Americans. It was a beautiful morning. He was in fine spirits. He loved music. He loved to whistle. And he whistled for his two prize spaniels. They were what we would know today as Springer Spaniels, that kind of dog. He was riding on a fat brown pony, feeling on top of the world, and marching along at the head of his column with his two little dogs behind him for what he assumed to be a pleasant duty, simply to march down and rejoin his commander, Lord Cornwallis, when all of a sudden, through the woods, he saw a column of moving men. His initial response, it must be British regulars. Soon he saw there were no uniforms, no red coats. It was the American army. And he paused for a moment, not knowing how many were there. And soon the confrontation unfolded. We will be right back with that and more. The battle of...
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from wallofire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Wallofire.com.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
USA News Update. This week, there is no relief at the nation's airports as everyone returns from their Christmas vacation.
Believe me, from now until the new year, every day is going to be an adventure.
Patty Mancha from the TSA says travelers should anticipate lengthy queues as this travel season has set new records. An influential advisor to Israel's prime minister is in Washington for significant meetings today. Ron Dermer, the Israeli minister of strategic affairs, is anticipated to engage in discussions about the conflict in Gaza with senior White House officials and members of Congress. If you're heading out for some post-Christmas bargain hunting, you won't be alone. Retailers say that today ranks as the second busiest shopping day of the year, surpassed only by Black Friday. According to an American Express poll, 57% of respondents plan to visit malls after Christmas. John Schaefer, USA News.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay Heating Pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay Heating Pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay Heating Pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Michael Medved back with you. The music here, some of the music that the British side of this conflict, including Colonel Charles Mawood with his two spaniels and his fat brown pony, would have enjoyed. This, the traditional version of British Grenadiers, which later changed its musical substance a bit, became very famous, actually was introduced into the British Army in the 1760s, was definitely used by the British side in the American Revolution. The reason that we know it was used by the British side is that the words were parodied by the Americans. You may know that the words for British Grenadiers are "some talk of Alexander and some of Hercules, of Hector and Lysander and such great names as these. But of all the world's brave heroes, there's none that can compare with a toe-row-row and a toe-row-row to the British Grenadier." Well, the Americans put their own words to the music. The words that the Americans put, at least in a version that was published in Massachusetts in May of 1774, before the revolution even started, to the same music. "We led fair freedom hither, and lo, the desert smiled, a paradise of pleasure, new opened in the wild. Your harvest, bold Americans, no power shall snatch away. Preserve, preserve, preserve your rights in free America." And then, "Torn from a world of tyrants, beneath this western sky, we've found a new dominion, a land of liberty. The world shall own we're freemen here, and such will ever be. Huzzah, 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 for love and liberty." Huzzah, 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 for love and liberty. Love and liberty at stake. The American column led by General Sullivan and by General Hugh Mercer, General Dr. Hugh Mercer. The men are absolutely exhausted. They had done this a week before at Trenton, now on January 3rd, having tramped all night, having left Trenton and marched up toward Princeton over frozen roads, totally exhausted. They hadn't eaten since they left, obviously. It's 8 in the morning. And all of a sudden, these British regulars spot them. And at this point, Colonel Mawood has a choice. His orders say, march back down and join Cornwallis. But Mawood understood that then the Americans could slip right behind him and capture the stores and capture the small garrison he had left behind at Princeton near the college. So he took matters into his own hands and he began firing on the Americans. The British fire was withering. The British, in fact, were determined to seize the high ground in which the American columns were colliding against one another. It was a chaotic moment because the men weren't formed up. They were exhausted. General Mercer tried desperately to get his men to stand and to load. Many of them just turned and ran at the first attack, the first volleys of British fire. Even though they had the British tremendously outnumbered, there were only a few hundred men with Mawood, but they were picked men. They were veteran grenadiers. They knew exactly what they were doing. Mawood fired again, and General Mercer came tumbling down. His horse was wounded in the leg. He was shaken badly. He now was on the ground, waving his sword, trying to rally his men. Other Americans are marching up. Washington is behind, remember. He is toward the end of the column. Meanwhile, by the way, the men who had been left behind at Assunpink Creek to dig and to fool the British, they had also joined the column. They were at the very end of it. They were all marching up. Meanwhile, they hear the crackle of rifle volleys, and Mawood makes a decision. It's a fateful decision. The Americans are chaotic. They are disassembled. They are having a difficult time getting together. He orders his men to fix bayonets and orders a bayonet charge. The British line came on in perfect discipline. And the infantrymen and the grenadiers, the British, were carried away by battle fury. They were screaming to get at their enemy in close combat. Mercer's men broke and fled. Only a few remained behind to fight. Many became vulnerable as they were fleeing, when they had to scale another fence on the south side of an orchard. Mercer was trying to hold his ground, trying to rally the men. The British bayonet charge came on. They saw a tall general. They could recognize him as a general by his hat. And the word went out they had bagged George Washington. It wasn't Washington. It was one of Washington's best friends, General Hugh Mercer. A British infantryman took a rifle butt, smashed it into Mercer's face, and said, "Surrender, ye damned rebel," thinking that he had captured General Washington himself. Mercer shouted back, "Never," waved his sword, ineffectually trying to fight off the British. A half dozen bayonets then plunged into him, and he was left for dead. He did survive for another week, but then he did die. Hugh Mercer, dead on the field. His friend, Colonel John Hazlett, the one who had been ordered by Congress to leave the Army, to go back to Delaware, and to form up a new unit, he was killed instantly when a bullet went through his head. Ironically, he had always been viewed as one of the most athletic people in the Continental Army, had dazzled people with his running, with his vaulting, his heroic leadership of the 1st Delaware. When they found his body, they found in his pocket the orders that he had chosen to disobey, the orders telling him not to be there for this battle, the battle that claimed his life. Meanwhile, with Mercer bayoneted on the ground, the British were losing control. They found very little American resistance. There was one lieutenant who had broken his leg when he fell from his horse. He was hiding beneath a farm cart. He tried to surrender. The British bayoneted him 13 times. A Captain Fleming was shot dead while trying to rally his Virginians. The American rout seemed to be complete. And a particularly humiliating rout it was, given the fact that there were many more Americans on the field than these British. But Mawood, urging his men on, and they moved on with ferociousness, screaming, charging, with their bayonets fixed. And in a moment, the battle might have been totally lost in this chaos, in this horror, except for one person. Rather stubborn person, nobody you've ever heard of. His name was Captain Joseph Mulder. M-O-U-L-D-E-R. Captain Mulder wasn't about to go anywhere. He had command of two guns. He had a dozen men serving under him. And with the Americans running and fleeing, dead officers on the field, Captain Mulder held his ground and ordered volley after volley against the British and caused them to hesitate long enough to change the course of history.
You're listening to a special history program, The Battle of Princeton. For more history shows, go to medvedhistorystore.com.
Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. This is $19.95 for a 3-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. If you're troubled by Washington moving toward more government control, income taxes, rent control, and centralized decision-making, now is the time for you to take action. At Washington Policy Center, we want free market reforms that make Washington the best place to raise a family, to get a job, or to start a business. WPC is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. Get off the sidelines. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. That's WashingtonPolicy.org. Instability, vulnerability, uncertainty, volatility, precarious, unpredictable. Now, all of those words describe our banking system right now, as evidenced by the recent collapse of major banks. Michael Medved here for AmFed Coin and Bullion. This was the second largest bank failure in history, and the Federal Reserve has been scrambling to keep this bank run from spreading. Now, if you feel uneasy about having too much money sitting in the bank, you're not alone. Gold, silver, and platinum have had recent gains as investors look for safe places to park their money. Now more than ever, you need to call my good friends Nick Grovich and company, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion. I've been doing business with Nick for many years, and I wouldn't go anywhere else. Nick and his team of specialists will provide you with personalized attention, honest information, and sound advice. If you're interested in buying or selling, call AmFed Coin and Bullion, 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
I had no idea it would destroy my life, but before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days' worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You're listening to a special history program, The Battle of Princeton.
Captain Mulder wasn't about to go anywhere. He had command of two guns. He had a dozen men serving under him. And with the Americans running and fleeing, dead officers on the field, Captain Mulder held his ground and ordered volley after volley against the British and caused them to hesitate long enough to change the course of history. Who was this guy? He was a river rat from Philadelphia. His squadron was all former sailors and longshoremen who had worked on the Delaware River wharfs in Philadelphia. The scum of society, as the British saw them. They weren't going anywhere. Mulder changed everything, all alone on the field, facing the British by himself with a dozen men. Some people say he had as many as 20. But this two-gun battery that he used to fire back at the British, well, it was so decisive precisely because it forced Mawood to reconsider. To reconsider sweeping forward and simply cleaning the Americans from the field. What one of the Americans who was there at the time reported was, "The enemy's fire was dreadful, and three balls had grazed me. One passed within my elbow, nicking my greatcoat, and carried away the breech of Sergeant McNatt's gun, he being close behind me. Another carried away the inside edge of one of my shoe soles. Another had nicked my hat, and indeed, they screamed as thick as hail." Had Mawood understood that the only thing that faced him on the top of the hill were two guns, one determined river rat from Philadelphia, and perhaps a dozen or 20 determined men, he certainly would have ordered his troops to charge that position, to sweep that position away, just like they swept away everything else on the field. But he couldn't imagine that Mulder would be making a stand with so few people. And so Mawood hesitated. He pulled his men back. They still had their bayonets ready. Then, suddenly, riding out of the woods was a sight that changed everything. Riding out of the woods came an extremely tall man on a white horse, galloping toward the guns, toward Joseph Mulder. And George Washington, riding into an amazingly exposed position, he had a half dozen aides and orderlies strung out behind him. And then behind them came some veteran Virginia Continentals and Edward Hand, remember the Irishman's determined rifleman at a dead run. Washington grasped the situation at once. He rallied near where Captain Mulder had his guns, and he left the riflemen to form up on the right of the hill and charged over to where some other frightened men were huddled under the slope. And he shouted, "Parade with us! There is but a handful of the enemy, and we will have them directly." The Pennsylvania militia started to form into little companies. Pennsylvania militia had never faced battle before. Men ran around frantically to find their own outfits. The remnants of Mercer's beaten force picked up their guns and fell in again, all rallying around George Washington, making an amazingly vulnerable target. Within a few minutes, 5 minutes, Washington had formed something of a battle line. He took off his hat. He was plainly visible. Everyone on the battlefield could see him. And using his hat, he waved his men forward while he personally rode ahead on his horse. By now, the British had shifted their line a little bit to the left to get out of the range of Mulder's murderous fire. And the American line was now stretching in front of them. Washington had given orders to his men, don't fire until he gave the signal. They were coming closer and closer and closer, with Washington riding in front. How close did they get? They came to within 30 yards of the Redcoats. And at this point, he on his horse reined up, turned in the saddle, and shouted, halt, and then fire. Almost immediately, there were two thundering volleys from the opposing armies. One of Washington's staff officers, Colonel John Fitzgerald, another Irishman, devoted to Washington, loved him like a father, saw the smoke with the two volleys, saw Washington only 30 yards from the British guns. And Fitzgerald began to weep, covered his face with his hat, not wanting to see the generals wounded, bloody, and dead body, where he would surely fall. But the results were somewhat different. We'll be right back with that. No, George Washington didn't die at the battlefield of Princeton. I think you kind of knew that, didn't you? It's January 3rd, 1777. The Lord had a lot more in mind for this particular man. And again, it is one of those things where everyone who saw it, and there were several thousand people who saw it, could not believe what they saw, which was this gigantic target. And this was no mistake. This was no mistaking it for you, Mercer, or anyone else. This was General Washington. Towering figure, particularly at his time, 6'3" tall, on top of his white horse, with his hat off, waving his men forward. He is 30 yards, that's 90 feet, from the British lines. They fire a volley. You know that some of these guys had to aim for George Washington. They'd be foolish not to. That's what you're supposed to do. You take out the commander of the other side. His horse ungrazed. General Washington ungrazed. A crashing explosion, smoke coming up, so that Colonel Fitzgerald, Washington's worried aide, couldn't see what had happened. He assumed in the smoke and the confusion that Washington had gone down. But when he turned to look again, he saw the commander-in-chief still in the saddle, calm, unharmed, waving his troops forward. Fitzgerald rode up, and he said, "Thank God, sir, your excellency is safe." And Washington, in his calm and soft voice, said, "Bring up your troops, my dear colonel. The day is our own." And indeed, the tide of battle had shifted. Let me read you another eyewitness account. This from that same anonymous sergeant, New England sergeant, known only as Sergeant R, who wrote his eyewitness account of the whole experience. About sunrise, reaching the summit of a hill near Princeton, we observed a light horseman looking towards us as we view an object when the sun shines directly in our faces. General Mercer, observing him, gave orders to the riflemen who were posted on the right to pick him off. Several made ready, but at that instant he wheeled about and was out of their reach. Soon after this, as we were descending a hill through an orchard, a party of the enemy, who were entrenched behind a bank and fence, rose and fired upon us. We formed, advanced, and fired upon the enemy. They retreated 8 rods to their packs, which were laid in a line. I advanced to the fence on the opposite side of the ditch, which the enemy had just left, fell on one knee, and loaded my musket with ball and buckshot. Our fire was most destructive. Their ranks grew thin, and the victory seemed nearly complete when the British were reinforced. Now here, our sergeant, our anonymous sergeant, is not telling the truth. The British weren't reinforced. They just got themselves together. They were disciplined men and all of a sudden rushed the Americans and overwhelmed them. The sergeant writes, "Many of our brave men had fallen, And we were unable to withstand such superior numbers of fresh troops. There were no superior numbers of fresh troops. The British had fewer numbers. The Americans just weren't ready for them. The sergeant reports, I soon heard General Mercer command in a tone of distress, retreat. He was mortally wounded and died shortly after. I looked about for the main body of the army. What he isn't saying is the reason he had to look about for the main body of the army is because he'd run away like everybody else, which I could not discover. Discharged my musket at part of the enemy and ran for a piece of wood at a distance where I thought I might shelter. At this moment, General Washington appeared in front of the American army, riding towards those of us who were retreating, and exclaimed, Parade with us, my brave fellows! There is but a handful of the enemy, and we will have them directly. I immediately joined the main body and marched over the ground again. The British were unable to resist this attack and retreated. And in fact, the attack, the sweeping enthusiasm that followed Washington's rally, stunned Mawood, stunned the British. Meanwhile, Captain Mulder is still pouring grape shot into the British lines, mowing down men in rows. The awful cacophony of noise rose to a crescendo, muskets going off along both lines, the wounded screaming, cannon belching, flame and noise. And suddenly, Daniel Hitchcock, a dying colonel from Massachusetts, he was to die 10 days later of tuberculosis, charged up with his veterans. They swept up the militia who were in front of them in a surge of excitement. And all of a sudden, the British, with open mouths, began to throw down their guns and to turn and to run. There was a brief silence on the field. This is something the Americans had never seen before. The first time the British had run away from Americans. And suddenly, a huge whoop went up the entire American army, echoed by General Washington, who couldn't restrain himself. He rode again to the front of his men, shouting out, It's a fine fox chase, boys! Come on!
Hey, want to feel young again? Are you tired, run down, have aches and pains, brain fog? This is science-based, not hype or fancy marketing. It really works. Carbon 60 helps detoxify your body on the cellular level. It stabilizes free radicals, just like the antioxidants found in red wine and berries do, but on a far smaller, more bioavailable nanoscale. It's like a bottle of electrons, helping your body to function better. You can also apply it on your skin, topically, over muscles, joints, or organs. Most people feel results within minutes. This is not a drug. It's organic carbon. Feel better today. About 95% of our users report more energy and clarity of mind within 10 days. Give us a call at Gresca's Carbon 60 at 720-600-6040 or visit our site at c-60.com. Call 720-600-6040. And feel young again.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.